I think, you know, while we're on the subject of like the family and the women who came before us and the importance of gender, I am interested also to find out about kind of sexuality as well as gender. I don't know anyone else in my family who would identify with being gay or queer. And I know that depending on the century that we're referring to, those words are not apropos anyway, right? So it's kind of like that archival quest, really, you know, when you're trying to find people like you who have lived before you. I think to say that I don't have them is bizarre. I'm not the first person to come along with this kind of, well, the feelings that I had as a teenager, or, you know, whatever, and then kind of coping, and then having, you know, all the reconciling and enjoying and, you know, interpreting what your life is as a whole, not to include your sexuality or what we call sexuality today, seems to me to be really a lacuna. So, for example, when I was looking at other playwrights, and so on, I was looking for other stories that talk about my experience or that I could relate to in some way. I would go, there used to be this, when I was at uni film school, there used to be this women's bookstore on Charing Cross Road, the Silver something. Anyway, they had a huge selection. It was downstairs. So the first bit was all kind of, you know, feminist. I can't even remember because I only went downstairs. So downstairs was where the drama was, I think, you know, where the sort of plays and theater and performing arts was. So I would be there looking for other playwrights. I would be there looking for other stories. And of course, it's so the bias of the kind of what it, you know, so-called Anglophile meant that there was very little Southeast Asian presence there, you know. But at least I could read others and kind of like imbibe. And then, of course, when I was, I joined this writing workshop that I was telling you about with Hanif Qureshi, the Royal Court had Young Activist Theatre, Royal Court Young Activist Theatre. And that put me in touch with other people my age who are actors or writers or directors. And then, okay, you know, I met other people like me who, you know, were that way inclined. And so, you know, and then you find your tribe, you know, it's a way for something at that particular point in my life, which was very reassuring, you know, even though it's confusing and all of those things, it's like, yeah. Okay. Here there is a norm of people like me. So in that way, it was a home. I find it so interesting how the terms for sexuality evolve over time. You know, so when I talk about my popo, you know, I wonder who popo knew who was like me. You know, or even my great grandmother or grandma in Stretford or great grandmother in Salford. I mean, hey, hello, you know, we, in inverted commas, had to have been there. So, and why is that important? Well, it's important for, you know, a sense of place, a sense of continuity. It's just as important as everything else. You know, what kind of theatre are you producing? You put yourself within a place of continuity. So it is important for me.
Do you think your voice has changed, as in your writing voice? Do you think it's changed from the time that you were much younger? And then that bridge where you sort of had a realization of who you were and accepting of yourself. Do you think that that voice has changed?
Well, surely it has. I mean, you know, if I look at any other person's body of work, I mean, you see how the work has evolved over a period of time. I mean, that's the kind of richness if a person's been able to do it for long enough, or even if they haven't for that matter. I mean, you can look at it and study and analyze the work. I mean, if I think about my first play, Happy Families.
What stage in your life were you at that time when you wrote it?
This was my third attempt to deal with the history of sexual abuse. So the first had been a poem that came out of the writer's workshop. And then from that poem, I developed it into my graduation film, which was called Frog and Princess. I had kind of created that in a way, partly to be able to bring up the subject with my parents, that, you know, a very trusted person within the circle was just doing very untrustworthy things, you know, and they had no idea. By the time I wrote Happy Families, that's the third iteration of this particular subject. So, and I was in my early 20s, and I was working with Fu Mei Lin, who had who was a very good friend of mine, and she was helping me both with the sort of artistic aspects of it as well as the emotional aspect. Sorry, I've moved away from that, but I'm still interested. And I don't know who isn't, you know, in issues of power. I do kind of wish that the body of work were looked at in a more critical way, as a body of work that has been developed from 1994 to present day. And there was going to be a women's theatre festival in July, but unfortunately that's just been cancelled, organized by Theatre Panas Panas. It's just been cancelled because of, you know, their original vision was including that there is physical gatherings, there, you know, the shows. I think they selected about 5 plays, and now that's cancelled. So I had been looking forward to that as a kind of, you know, wow, 25, 27, nearly 30 years later, how does that play go down? You know, what do people say about it? What would I say about it? You know, and they had some interviews lined up. But that didn't happen. So you just have to think, well, you know, maybe people will look at it in some due course. And I think, I'm not sure if I mentioned this to you earlier, Jasmine, about Grace Chin, Dr. Grace Chin. She's at USM. In fact, I feel like I would like to know how she includes Hung Li Po within the module, or because that kind of makes me feel, because I always think that my themes are racial and sexual politics. Those are my basic sort of themes that I go to in all the work. So how necessarily do people connect to that, if they do at all? But I don't know, the only overt sexuality is in Happy Families, is right at the end, where there's this kind of like imagined scene of what happened to all the girls that we first meet at the stayover. But we didn't actually perform that, you know. Yeah, we didn't perform that for 2 reasons, I think. One was because the penultimate scene is a dance, is a performance. And I think in working closely with the choreographer, Lina Ang, who's a Bhutto dancer and choreographer, or was then, we felt it should end there. It was weird to kind of have this very clunky appendix on. I mean, it was always meant to be an afterword, but I couldn't find a way that it could smoothly go into that. And so we didn't do it. But I think the second reason was maybe I felt that it was a bit too corny. That, you know, of the 4 girls, we should be hearing, it's a letter between the girl who was being molested to her closest friend. And that friend is the person who's gay. She's just gotten married with someone in order to stay in the country, something like that. But there's reference to her girlfriends and some, not just friends, you know, real girlfriends. And that's really the only thing that I have written that's explicit. I am kind of fairly cognizant and fairly out. I mean, some of it is private, yes, just part of me, you know. So,
I mean, you're probably one of the most out, and I hate labels. I mean, I really do not like the noun pronoun thing. But after speaking with you the other day, I've opened my mind up about it, and I get it about nouns and pronouns, and that it's not about you. It's about making somebody else feel accepted, right?
Yeah.
But you are probably one of the most vocal through actions, staging, you know, a very public affair on your wedding. In Penang. And I just recall that I was actually there. I wasn't invited to a party because I didn't know you, but my very good friend was your DJ, I think, Beryl.
Yes.
Yes. And I was just trying to recall, like, this sounds so familiar. And then I remembered that I was actually in Penang at that time, knew of it, giggled, like, I thought it was just the greatest thing ever. And that was one of the memories that I had as well, of you waving this flag.
Rainbow flag.
Huh? From Malaysia, lah.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, you know, unfortunately, I was with somebody who felt this was also important to kind of have a... I mean, it was still a private event, right? I mean...
Yes.
That it was...
It was a very publicly known private event.
It's in a kind of like comment, in a gossip sort of, you know, oh... Something, yeah, I think it was Mingguan Malaysia referred to it. And this, another friend told me about it. And then I saw it. And it's exactly right. Because I was saying, you know, we made sure that everybody, you know, all friends stayed, that the whole hotel was booked out with friends, except for one couple from Amsterdam who every year will go to Penang at that particular time. And luckily, you know, they were up for it. And we met them and it was all cool. Yeah, I mean, you still have to be careful, Khan. I mean, I think you once a former RTM newscaster, maybe that's with you for the rest of your life. I don't know. But, you know, so on a slow day of news, when you got nothing else better to do.
I mean, that was very liberating to hear. And as you say, it's very important to have role models or even stories of others, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yes. Oh, you have to be the space astronaut out there on their own. It's all right for a time, I think, but it just gets you a bit crazy otherwise. Yeah.
Are you planning to write any text or plays or anything at all on this topic, on sexuality? Or do you have anything published in anthologies or collections?
Well, Sue and her natural love for swimming is one of them. But, you know, as you say, though, she goes back to her life, right? So there's a kind of unhappy, classically unhappy ending in that way. But I like to think that there's some hope, some promise that they will, you know, meet again and so on and so forth. And who knows what happens next. But yeah, I have one other story, a short story in Body to Body, which is, the subheading is A Malaysian Queer Anthology. And that was published by Matahari, you know, the indefatigable Amir Muhammad, who is just such a genius and a lovely man. That was published in 2009. So that was a long time ago, you know. I've written poetry, of course. I mean, you know, private poetry and all about, you know, the genre of poetry of love and rejection and longing and all of that. But that's very private. So that is not published, you know, and I hope, like, well, I guess if I'm dead and nobody cares and somebody comes up again, but like, this is a strange book, then they would see the light. But otherwise they are, I don't know quite actually, you know, why I haven't written more in my plays, because I needed to get them performed, and therefore fearing how, yeah, duh, you know.
Do you think as people with Malaysian heritage, we self-edit or self-censor? Self-censor, that's the more apt word. Because I know that I tend to do that to myself.
Well, I think that's a for sure thing. For sure thing. I mean, we do. And I, you know, having studied more about censorship and satire, you know, I understand that there is a function of self-censorship that is not just purely a bad thing. You know, I mean, you cannot look at expression and freedom of expression in black and white terms. But, you know, I think there is a romantic notion around kind of like, you know, the only life you can have is completely out. No, why should it be that way, right? But neither should you want to be kind of, you know, because there are always choices that we make, right, about anything. So you choose one thing or another. And yes, maybe you move country to be in a place where that kind of thing is more open, but then they'll be like super racist or something. Although, you know, like, so what you escaped, it, or a different kind of racism that is just really feels worse. I don't know. Anyway, I'm speaking very simply. But you know what
you
I mean
like
right?
There'll be another skeleton in the closet.
Yeah. The intersectional analysis, which I think is one of the greatest things that have become more like mainstream within the last 30 years. You know, one is around the new lexicon of words of trans, cis, and all that, which I think is wonderful. I see that as a real kind of progression of understanding, not linear, but, you know, really a deeper level of understanding. So do I think intersectional is important because, yeah, there's many factors. I mean, we used to just talk about lesbian and gay, blah, 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 blah. But what about class? What about ethnicity? What about age? What about ability? You know, all of those things. So it's the analysis becomes more, not just sophisticated, but it becomes more truthful somehow, right? In terms of being able to describe, because we don't want labels, like you say, you know, you hate labels. I also hate labels, but they have a purpose for certain exercises. And one of those is, you know, I mean, identity politics is supposedly something of our age, right? I don't know what's going to happen for Rhea, for example, for whom I am super godma or suma. Rhea is now, you know, a year and a half. What is she or S/HE going to face? They going to face in coming years? I don't know what's going to be for them, but for us, I think identity politics, you know, in the 90s was simpler in terms of the kind of you came closer by identification of all the words that exist in Malay, Chinese, Tamil, Telugu, of which many are negative.
Sorry, the magpies are like gathering here and they're like, they want to hear what Anne Lee's saying.
I can't hear it. So maybe it's a, I'm just hearing a stupid word. Oh, that was sensational.
I know, they're really loud.
That's a magpie sound.
And they're very capable. I'll show you.
Kipu is good.
Who do you think in terms of Malaysia's most out and proud and prolific writer, who do you think would take the crown? Who's out?
Yeah.
Who's outwardly?
It's difficult, right? There is actually, but now, you, of course, Punky Tech is, you know, he's a very, yes, very well-known person. And
his is the, right, first name, but I think.
I would probably say him as a writer. I mean, it's not like he has a body of short stories and this is it, but things that he writes, you know, it's lived experience and the campaign work and all that. It's beautiful.
Is he published?
He's more of an editor. I mean, he edited with Jerome Coogan.
Yeah, Jerome Coogan.
Right, Body to Body. So he's done a lot of editing and behind the scenes work, also as a producer and so on. But yeah, I would say Pong. I would say Pong for women. I don't know, who would it be?
You.
One scene.
You, madame.
Two short stories. Yeah, right. I used to, you know, Amir's first film, Lips to Lips, he had a joke. It ended on the cutting room floor, but he had this lovely line that the two characters, you know, one of them said, mentions lesbian or quietly, and then says, you know, oh, it sounds like a vegetable that you don't want to eat, you know. And I actually did think that lesbian was not a word that I could associate with at all, you know, and maybe, yeah, it was because of the attendant kind of stereotype of like super butch or, you know, and butch meaning kind of in a negative sense and all of that. So, you know, I didn't feel that, it didn't feel like that label was for me, but of course, you know, hello. there weren't other labels that were close. Gay, I would more readily say gay or queer than I would lesbian. Because that really, even now, it feels like this great big boulder that Asterisk is carrying or something. I don't know. It's
I know what you mean, because gay just sounds so gay, right? Like so fashionable, whereas lesbian just sounds like a very heavy handbag.